Please be seated.
Yes, Ms. Rees.
Yes. Lauren Keller.
Yes. Mr. Holt, yes.
Good morning, Commissioner. I appear with Ms. Hughes of Council. We're instructed by Holding Redlich. I seek Your Honour's leave to appear for and for Lara Keller to appear in this Commission of Inquiry.
Yes, you have leave.
May I please the Court.
Ms. Rees.
Commissioner, there have been some documents provided overnight which are available on request
from
the operator. They're not yet on our online system. They've been made available to the parties. Other than that, nothing further from me at this stage.
Yes. Mr. Hickey.
Thank you, Commissioner. Ms. Quartermaine, there are two issues in fairness that I want to cover off with you arising from yesterday's evidence that have become obvious to me on reading the transcript. You and I might have been at cross purposes. And so in fairness to you and in assistance to the Commissioner, I think I ought to go back to those points. The first is, you'll recall there was a passage yesterday afternoon when I was asking you about with what you compared what you describe as the very high level of control. Do you recall that?
I do remember speaking about that, yes.
In particular, the passage that might help you recall is that I churlishly attempted to ask you to compare apples with pears, and the Commissioner quite rightly said that's not helpful. Do you recall that exchange? That.
Yes.
Upon reviewing the transcript, it seems to me that I misunderstood the effect of your evidence, which was I had thought you had said that you were comparing a QPS work unit with a forensic DNA work unit. For the benefit of everybody else, the transcript reference is page 988 from lines 1 to 10. And when I asked you the question, what you said was, well, compared with, for example, the police services stream consists of forensic DNA and forensic chemistry. Now, what you were describing there, weren't you, is two separate units within FSS.
That's correct.
Oh, thank you. I understand that. having clarified that point, it's not the case, though, is it, that you've ever worked in the forensic chemistry section?
No.
And so to the extent that you have knowledge of what happens in terms of the administrative matters within that unit, that's just based on what other people have told you.
Yes.
And so you'd accept, wouldn't you, that you might be wrong about what you understand to be the case in respect of the way the forensic chemistry section is, in fact, administered?
I can only go by information that I've been provided. I haven't read their processes.
Thank you. Now, the second issue that I wanted to clarify with you, you'll recall that I took you through a chain of email, and across the break yesterday afternoon, you were asked to review a chain of email.
Yes.
And in the course of that line of questioning, you'll recall that I suggested to you that one of your responses had been a snide response. Do you recall that?
I do.
And you suggested to us that there was some other context that you needed to understand, that there might have been additional emails before and after that exchange that weren't presently available to us. Do you recall that?
Yes.
But I ask the operator, please, to bring up the first of the documents. I understand, Commissioner, there are two, and so I'll attempt to identify the beginning of the exchange as best I can. Would you mind scrolling down, please, Mr. Operator? Is that to the very bottom of the... there we are. Sorry. one more.
Is that the last page?
Scroll up, please. That's it. Thank you. Yes, perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So there we see you write to Ms. Allen on the 4th of November.
Yes.
And in particular, what you raise is you'd been thinking about a below email about Christmas Eve. And sorry, I should say the earlier email is about Ms. Allen communicating to the team that her expectation was that 75% of people would be available to work on Christmas Eve.
Yes.
You recall that. And you quite generously come back and say, well, I'm working on Christmas Eve anyway. I think that we can probably do with 50% of the team. Isn't there some way we could arrange it so that others can spend that time at home with their families?
It was just a suggestion, yes.
Of course. And that's what you explained there.
Yes.
And then if we can just scroll on, please, up, please, Mr. Operator. So here is Kathy Allen replying to you. And if we scroll even further up, please, stop there. We can see this is one of the emails I think that you were taken to yesterday.
Yes.
This is her response.
Yes.
If we continue to scroll up, please, Mr. Operator. Stop there. We can see your response to that. You and she are going backwards and forwards about the detail of the turnaround times and how they're measured, what particular metric it is that QPS uses for its purposes of ascertaining the number of samples that haven't been concluded.
Yes.
And then if we can scroll up, please, Mr. Operator. Right, we get to the top. Now, is there a second document or is that it? Is there another one? Thank you. Could we scroll to the bottom, please? Is there only two pages of that, Mr. Operator?
Fourth page.
Scroll on, please. Oh, that is the fourth page. Scroll up, please. All right, pause there, please. Here we see again you having an exchange with Ms. Allen about the turnaround times, the way the metric is measured. If we scroll up, we see you responding to her. That's a few more questions. You're sending on to the team to explain that you've been liaising with Kathy around the 50 and 75% issue.
Yes.
If we scroll up. This is the response that we've seen before.
Yes.
And then you respond to her, and that's the end of the thread. So having reviewed that overview, can I suggest in fairness to you what it appears as though the first issue that you'd said in the correspondence we saw yesterday, that you hadn't had a reply to your original point, was really this point about whether 50% of the workforce could attend on Christmas Eve rather than 75.
Yes.
And so when you were circulating that message to the team, you weren't intending to be snide about the substantive response that Ms. Allen had given you, but rather refer to the fact that you hadn't really yet got to the bottom of whether people could go home on Christmas Eve.
And it was my understanding that I'd asked Kathy this directly because the email about the 75% had come from her to Forensic DNA Analysis, but there were discussions within the management team after this around this particular issue.
Yes, thank you. Does that clarify the point, Commissioner?
Sorry?
Does that clarify the point?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Hickey.
Could I return then to the substantive points that were left to address with you yesterday afternoon? When we left off, we were talking about those matters that you identified, which you said were the causes of your suggestion that there had been very high levels of control exercised at the lab. Do you recall that?
I recall us discussing that, yes.
The one that I was about to move on to was your concern that the stationery cupboard was locked. And in particular, you'd said that by comparison to the forensic DNA lab, forensic chemistry don't have a locked stationery cupboard.
I didn't say that.
Well,
I don't know whether they've got a locked stationary cupboard or not, but we do in forensic DNA analysis.
I'm sorry, I'm just reading from the transcript where you say, compared with, for example, the police services stream consists of forensic DNA, forensic chemistry, and as far as I'm aware, forensic chemistry don't have any rules as to when they, like specific hours that they need to call in sick. They don't have locked stationary cupboards. So compared to the other department under Kathy's managing scientist, under her as the managing scientist. So
that- I don't recall saying that I knew that forensic chemistry have locked stationary cabinets because I don't know if they do. I do know that they don't need to call in sick between specific hours and that their work hours are allowed to extend prior to 7 a.m.
All right. So, again, I'm not intending to be difficult about it, but you don't, contrary to the evidence you gave yesterday, you don't know whether the other team has a locked stationary cabinet.
I don't know whether forensic chemistry does or not.
All right, thank you. Are you aware that the administrative team has found that if they place a number of pens or post-it notes out for general access, the stock is exhausted within a day or two?
That's what stationery's for, isn't it?
I'm asking you whether you're aware of that.
Not specifically, no.
All right. And so because of that, small amounts are placed out on regular intervals to ensure that staff can gain access to it. Are you aware of that?
Yes.
All right. Are you aware that Kathy Allen did not implement that procedure?
I don't know who implemented that procedure.
Have you ever asked anybody who implemented the procedure?
No.
Have you ever raised a complaint about the inconvenience of the procedure?
I've spoken to people about it, but I've not raised it as a formal complaint. My line manager,
Kylie
my
Ricker,
team, probably lots of people over time. This has been the case for quite a few years.
You see, the thing is, Ms. Quatermain, you point to this issue by way of evidence of what you describe as a very high level of control. And when I asked you yesterday, who do you say exerts the high level of control? Your evidence was it's Cathy Allen. And what I'm trying to understand is how you can lay the blame for very high level of control in respect of stationery or access to it at the feet of Ms. Allen in the circumstances that you've just described.
Well, Cathy, being our managing scientist, if she isn't the person who has exercised that control, then she would know of the person that's exercised that control, and potentially these questions are best directed to her. I don't know who's brought that in. I just feel that as our managing scientist, it would most likely have been the person in charge of our department. That's just my perception.
Do you suggest that the managing scientist of the forensic lab would be concerning herself with pens and post-it notes?
I am saying that our managing scientist, I would expect that she would be concerning herself with all aspects of the running of the laboratory.
Including pens and post-it notes?
Including pens and post-it notes, yes.
All right. That being so, can I assume then that this lack of access to stationery is something that's been an ongoing problem for you over a long period of time?
Yes.
And you've raised it with your line manager?
Well, there's been discussions over time about the inconvenience, yes.
With your line manager?
With my line manager, with my work colleagues, with other reporting staff members.
Sorry, Mr. Hickey, just so I understand it, if you want to get a new pen or a few more post-it notes, what do you have to do?
So as Mr. Hickey stated, there is limited stock that's sitting on the shelves available for us to grab, but not all of it is always available. So if I want to go and get, for example, the size post-it notes that you're holding because I'm reviewing a statement and I need to tab things along the way, sometimes that's not available and I would have to go to an administrative staff member.
And like anybody we know, I mean, is... I'm aware of the people who occupy particular positions.
Yes.
Ms. Brizzotto, Mr. Howes, Ms. Allen, Ms. Ricker, Ms. Johnston.
Yes.
Who do you have to approach to get a pen or a...
So our admin staff, who are the staff members who send statements for us and do a lot of our administrative tasks, including checking our leave forms and things like that. Those
I
staff
see. So the, like the secretarial staff, the secretariat staff.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. And so you approach one of them and say, "I need some stickies," and they're not available. And they go to the lock cover, unlock it, and get it for you.
That's correct.
I see. Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Hickey.
Thank you, Commissioner. Ms. Quatermain, can I suggest to you that really this is a trifling issue in the grand scheme of things?
I think that's her point, Mr. Hickey.
And what I'm suggesting to you, Ms. Quatermain, is that this isn't any serious disruption to your ability to perform your work.
It's no disruption to the ability for me to perform my work. It's an inconvenience on occasion. And it's just the general feeling of not being trusted to only take what I need from a stationery requirement perspective.
But you've never communicated to Cathy Allen, being the person that you say exercises the very high level of control, that you perceive that control over stationery to be an example of her doing that.
No, I've never spoken to Cathy about stationery.
And you'd expect, wouldn't you, that if you had, she would address that issue.
I can ask her. I've never asked her, so I wouldn't know what to expect from her, to be honest with you.
But you'd agree with me that that might be one way of solving that particular problem.
I agree with that.
All right. Now, could we turn then, please, to Ms. Quatermain's second statement. The document is WIT.0012.0028.0004. And the relevant page we need to go to, please, is 004. Zoom in, please, on paragraph 20. Now, this is the final paragraph in a section where you're talking about the exchange that you had with Ms. Allen around the turnaround times and the current sample list of figures. The exhibit is AQ01. That's the email exchange that you had with Ms. Allen in November 2020, and that's part of that suite that I asked you about this morning and also yesterday afternoon. You recall that?
Yes.
And you'll recall that the exchange that you were having with Ms. Allen was about the manner in which QPS and by consequence the lab measured its turnaround times. Do you recall that?
That was one of the things, yes.
And what you say in paragraph 20 is Ms. Allen's lack of understanding around the number of outstanding samples and how our work output KPIs are tallied concerns me. Now, can I just ask you some questions about that? Did you ever put to Ms. Allen that, in your opinion, she did not understand the number of outstanding samples and how the work output KPIs are tallied?
I think that I did put that in my emails to her and she responded to that.
All right. We can bring the email up, but can I suggest to you that one does not see in that email, you plainly suggest to her that she doesn't understand it?
I wouldn't have used the words that I didn't think she understood it, but I think I made it clear that the information she had provided to Forensic DNA, the figures weren't added up correctly.
All right. And then you go on to say the emails that she'd sent to DNA analysis staff outlining outstanding data is technically incorrect.
Yes.
And causes concern within the reporting team. Again, can I suggest to you that you didn't squarely suggest to her that her understanding, her analysis was technically incorrect?
Again, I don't think I used that terminology, but I think I made it clear that Kathy had incorrectly quoted the amount of outstanding samples in my emails to her.
All right. Now, could we go then, please? I'm sorry to do this out of order, but these things arose from the tail end of your evidence in chief yesterday afternoon. Could we return, please, to Ms. Quatermain's first statement? Page reference is WIT.0012.0025.0018. And if we could zoom in, please, on paragraph 107 at the foot of the page. You say here that Kylie once mentioned that she had had discussion in a management team meeting about the MS Teams form acting as a deterrent to reporting. You see that? Deterrent to the reporting scientists to rework the samples.
Yes.
And I think you gave some evidence yesterday afternoon to similar effect, as to say, look, it's a bit of a nuisance to have to fill in the form. It acts to deter the reporting scientists from doing that step.
Yes.
Do I understand that the evidence you give in paragraph 107 is entirely based on what Ms. Ricker said to you, not from any personal communication that you had with Ms. Allen?
Yes.
And so you've never personally raised this issue with Ms. Allen?
No.
Now, it's the case, isn't it, that these requests have to go via Mr. Howes and then ultimately they go to Ms. Allen?
That's my understanding.
You've never raised this particular issue, that is that it acts as a deterrent to reporting scientists. You've never raised that issue with Mr. Howes?
I don't think so.
Right. So you were entirely reliant upon Ms. Ricker having escalated that issue in an appropriate way.
I never raised it to Kylie as an issue as such, just that it was an extra step that sometimes led to a statement release date being pushed back, and that could be seen as, if we're unable to meet court dates, not favourably by the court.
Right. So focusing again on paragraph 107, you say that Kylie mentioned in a reporting Team 2 meeting when you were still in her team that she had once commented that the form may act as a deterrent to reporting scientists. Is it the case then that that view was not one that you held, but rather one that she held?
That was a discussion that had been had, again, just within the reporting team area in general. I may have had conversations in general with people, but my statement here says that Kylie had once commented in a management team meeting that the MS team's form may act as a deterrent to reporting scientists to rework samples at statement stage if they think this is appropriate. And I recall Kylie saying that Kathy acknowledged that to be the case. That's my recollection of the discussion that was had.
All right. And when was that, do you recall?
No.
Was it a long time ago or more recently?
Oh, more than 12 months ago, but not more than 3 years ago.
Right. Now, in paragraph 108, you say, in your experience, and perhaps if we just scroll down a little, please, thank you, Ms. Allen does not turn around MS Teams requests for rework authority promptly and can take up to a week. Can I suggest to you, you've never raised that particular issue directly with Ms. Allen?
I don't know if I've raised it with respect to how I've written it there, but I have followed up after I've sent a request asking if she's had a chance to look at it because I had a court date that I had to meet for a statement. I do remember having email communication with her around how much longer she thought it might take for her to get to my request.
All right. Is there implicit in what you say in paragraph 108 a criticism of Ms. Allen?
It's more that if I've submitted one of these requests, which, as I've said yesterday, I haven't done frequently, it's something that I expect to be turned around as quickly as possible, given that there may be an impending court date that can't be changed because there's an upcoming trial, and it's important to get this information back as soon as possible so that I can undertake any reworking that I need to do. And I feel like if I have to follow that first request up with a second email, that I would hope that Kathy would understand the importance of requesting these things, and having them turned around quickly is important to us as reporting scientists.
That's a helpful explanation. Can I suggest to you, you've never explained that in those terms to Ms. Allen?
Again, I don't know the words I would have used, but if when I've needed to follow one of these up with Kathy, I've emailed her to say that whatever the reason is that I need to get this turned around quickly, and would she please prioritise it for me?
But again, to the extent that you describe it here in 108, and you've just explained it by the second last answer to me, you've never explained to Kathy in those direct and clear words the problem that it presents when, in your view, she doesn't promptly return the form.
If I haven't said to Kathy, can you please turn this around faster because you're delaying the output of my work?
Yes.
I've said to Kathy, could you please prioritise my request? It's important to me that I meet a court deadline, something along those lines, so that she understands the urgency around the request and that I need her authority to do further work. And even once I get that authority, the work starts then. So I'd still then have to rework a sample, interpret the result, report the result, all before I write it into the statement. So it's important to get these things turned around quickly. And in an email conversation with her, I may have requested that she prioritise looking at one of these requests from me because there is urgency around getting the statement out to the court.
See, the thing is, Ms. Quartermaine, each member of the team has a responsibility for fostering the team's culture, don't they?
Yes.
It's not something which can be placed only at the feet of the management. The rest of the team.
Everybody's responsible, yes.
Just so I understand the significance of this, Mr. Hickey, is it going to be your submission at the end of the day that there was an obligation on Ms. Quartermaine or her colleagues, if they struck the same problem, to explain to the managing scientist that there were time pressures?
What the submission will ultimately be, Commissioner, is this. You've heard a lot of evidence both in the last module and already in this one, which fall within the broad umbrella of culture.
Yeah.
And what was suggested by another witness in the last module, and I anticipate will be said again, is that there was a toxic culture. And what's been said by Ms. Quartermaine is that there was very high levels of control. And what the Commissioner's heard lots of evidence about is perceptions and feelings.
Yeah.
And the ultimate submission that may be advanced is it's all well and good to expect that managers might know certain things. And indeed, time pressures might be one that the Commissioner would assume a manager would be aware of. But insofar as a specific complaint about a very specific thing, which is here a request for work to be done, a form to be returned, it acting as a deterrent to certain steps being undertaken, the submission, which I anticipate may well be advanced, is that the lack of communication goes in two directions. That is to say, unless people express their concerns to the right person, and indeed, if the person to whom they've expressed it to, as an intermediary between somebody like Ms. Quartermaine and somebody like Ms. Allen, ultimately, does not occur effectively, then that's not something that can solely be laid at the feet.
I understand, and it's a substantial point that you raise, that when somebody has a complaint about something, then if you don't voice it, you shouldn't assume that the person with whom you're engaging is aware of it and is just ignoring you or is doing something deliberate to create for some purpose.
That's the point.
I understand that. But in relation to this, it's the managing scientist we're talking about, who's one of whose concerns is about maintaining a short time turnaround times as is reasonable. And what's being put by this witness is that when she makes a request pursuant to protocol for permission to advance the processing of a sample, the managing scientist may take up to a week to respond, and that this irritates her and frustrates her is the substance of it. And what you're putting is, did you ever tell the managing scientist that it was unreasonable to take a week to respond?
Yes.
And so what I'm asking is, are you going to be submitting at the end of the day, and I guess leading evidence from Ms. Allen, that she didn't appreciate that it was unreasonable to take a week to respond?
Well, I apprehend that there are two things that might follow from that, in particular in respect of Ms. Allen. The Commissioner's already heard that there are two steps between somebody like Ms. Quartermaine and Ms. Allen. So in terms of there being a delay by Ms. Allen, it doesn't necessarily follow that the delay is entirely attributable to her. And so it may well be, for instance, that for reasons that are presently unclear on the evidence that the Commissioner's received, there may be a delay at Mr. Howe's. And so Ms. Allen can't action it until it makes its way through him. And so it may be, for instance, that in fact the problem lies with Mr. Howe's. But if Ms. Allen is never made aware of it by somebody like Ms. Quartermaine, how can she act?
But that doesn't make sense. If on the 1st of February a request for approval goes to Mr. Howe's, he delays it for 6 days, Ms. Allen then receives it and responds within 24 hours. she would see that it sat with Mr. Howes for a week. What I'm getting at is I don't understand the significance of this questioning when it should be, I had thought it would be apparent to everybody in the chain, Mr. Howes, Ms. Quatermain, she should make her request promptly. They should deal with it promptly, I would have thought. And that if it doesn't come back to her promptly, it would be apparent to the people above her that they're not dealing with it promptly. And what you're putting to her is you didn't tell them they weren't dealing with it promptly, as though this would be news to them, the significance would be news to them. Do you see what I'm, my trouble?
I've put my instructions, Commissioner, yes. And I'll have a move on it.
Thank you, I understand. But I'm putting to you the, what I'm trying to grasp is the significance of what you're putting.
I understand. Now, can I return then to the evidence you gave yesterday? I'm reading from page 909 of the transcript at line 46. And you said, in response to a question by the learned counsel assisting Ms. Rees, who asked you a question about how certain things make you feel, you said, it makes me feel like I've been here for 17 years. I like my job. I enjoy what I do. I want to do what I'm doing to the best of my ability. And when I have people who stop me from being able to do that, it becomes a problem for me because then I feel like I'm not doing the best I can in my job. Can I ask you to clarify precisely who it is you say is stopping you from being able to do that to the best of your ability?
Well, currently, the fact that I have to request permission to exhaust a sample and that permission may or may not be granted, given that the current process for microconning a sample, the default is to microcon the sample to 35, that's done prior to me having the opportunity to even look at that sample. So based on current process, if police decide to rework a sample and submit a rework request, that request, my understanding is that it comes through to the analytical team, and the senior scientist at the analytical team orders the rework, being a microcon to 35. Then once that sample has been through the analytical processes and a DNA profile has been generated and is available for me to interpret, what's done is done. I can't then go back and say, oh, ideally I wouldn't have microconned this sample to 35. I would have microconned it to full because I think that that's the best way forward for this sample to get a good usable DNA profile. Current processes prevent me from doing that.
All right, thank you. Now, one other point that you made yesterday in your evidence, for the benefit of others, I'm reading from page 912 of the transcript at line 23. Here you were talking about professional development and in particular about reading journal articles. Do you recall that?
I do recall the Commissioner asking me something about journal articles.
I'll read you the relevant part. You say, everything is so high time pressure that reading journal articles or doing anything outside of the scope of your normal day-to-day work is almost viewed like you are not doing the core work that should be done. Now, when you say almost viewed, by whom do you suggest it's viewed?
Well, the expectation of Justin is to, he's put to us before in reporting that if we're able to case manage one sample per hour, review one sample per hour, then for a full-time employee, you're case managing 38 samples per week and reviewing 38 samples per week. Depending on the types of samples that you're case managing and reviewing, you may do more or you may do less. But in order to attempt to meet that goal, it's almost impossible on occasion to do that and then have time put aside to read relevant journal articles that might have been emailed to the department that day.
Right. Let me just break that down then. Is your answer to my question then that it's Mr. Howes who views it like you're not doing your core work?
No, I don't. I don't think it's viewed as not doing our core work, but given the time pressures that we feel and we're communicated each week when we receive an email from one of the managers around the plan for the following week being, please prioritise this, it's important to focus on this, that there's never anything in there that says, please ensure you take an hour to read a relevant journal article to keep your knowledge up to date. So the priority always comes across as the case management and review and statement output, never on anything outside of that.
All right. In the same way that a manager might be expected to have implicit understanding of time pressures, for instance, might it not also be the case that a scientist would implicitly understand that part of their job was reading journals and keeping themselves scientifically up to date?
I'm sorry, can you ask that question to me again, please?
Might it not be that you don't need to be told part of your responsibility as a professional scientist is to read journals and to keep up to date? That's something that you should know you ought to do as a professional scientist.
Sorry, the point that I was more making was spending time doing anything other than case management, review, statement writing and statement review as our priority each week. Because there's so much work to be done and so many results to be output, okay. We're often getting emails from our line managers to, could you please focus on this particular case? Police are chasing these results. They come through frequent enough that sometimes my core work of getting onto a review list or a case management list doesn't even happen in a day.
Thank you. I understand that. Can I ask you then, please, and I'm getting to the end of my questions, which I'm sure you and others will be grateful for, are you... do you participate in yearly performance reviews?
I think they're supposed to be yearly, but they don't happen that frequently.
All right. And when they do happen, who conducts those?
My line manager.
Barley Ricker or Sharon Johnston?
Presently Sharon Johnston.
Does anybody else participate in those?
No.
All right. Thank you. Now, can I ask you, again, you gave some evidence yesterday. For others, it's at page 883 of the transcript, line 24. You were asked again by Melinda Fred, Ms. Reeson, what kind of relationship did you have with him being Mr. Howes, at that time? And I can tell you that time was April 2020. And you said, good working relationship. We started at forensic DNA analysis, I think it was the same month of the same year. So your view in April 2020 was that you had a good working relationship. It remained the case, didn't it, that you've continued to have a good working relationship with Mr. Howes?
Yes.
You'd describe him as somebody who's approachable?
Yes.
And courteous?
Yes.
Hardworking?
Yes. Oh, well, Justin does a lot of tasks that I don't see, so I see him in his office a lot, so yes, I assume that he is hardworking.
You've got no reason to think he isn't?
No, of course not.
And he's professional in his relationships with you at all times, isn't he?
Yes.
All right. Those are the questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey.
Commissioner, there's a couple of matters that have arisen overnight. I wonder if I might ask some further questions of the
Court. Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask you about the procedure for working samples that were reported as DIFP.
Yes.
I'm interested in the process that applied prior to June of this year. Was there at the laboratory a procedure for concentrating samples to not 35 microliters but to 4?
So we've always had the option of microconning samples to full. If, as a scientist, I order a microcon in our system and I don't put any specific instructions in there to state anything other, it will be microcon to 35. If I order a microcon and I put a specific note in that sample and say, please microcon to full, then the analytical scientist will microcon that sample to full.
And there has always been a procedure, that is a formal procedure for microconning to full?
Yes.
And if you were asking for a sample that had already been reported as being DIFP to be microconcentrated.
Yes.
Was it possible for you to ask that that sample be microconcentrated to full?
Yes. Although in the current climate, it's still my understanding, and I haven't checked emails recently, but we would have to get Queensland Police permission to do so because that would potentially exhaust the sample.
Yeah, but I'm concerned with what occurred prior to June of this
year. Okay, yes.
So prior to June of this year?
Yes. We were able to microcon to 35 or microcon to full samples that were DIFP or no DNA detected.
And there were procedures for that that have been in place for years.
Correct? Microcon procedures. I've been microconning samples for years.
To full?
Yes.
Right. The other question concerns...
Of course, Mr. Hunter, before 2018, the DIFP samples were being automatically microcon to 35, as I understand. Is that right?
I should make that clear, yes. That's the position, isn't it?
That's my understanding,
And I'm talking about after 2018, you could ask for a sample to be microcon to full.
Yes.
But even before 2018... microcon to full was something that was happening.
Yes.
And it's been happening for really as long as you can recall. Is that right?
Okay. Yes.
The other question is whether microconning to 35 would exhaust the sample.
So microconning to 35 won't exhaust the sample given the goal volume is 35 microliters. So if you take away 2 microliters for the quant and then 15 microliters for the amp, then you've got enough volume remaining to amp at 15 microliters a second time.
So it's completely wrong to suggest that microconcentration will result in the sample being exhausted.
If you're just saying it as microconcentration, you'd need to specify. So I would say if you're microconning a sample to full, there's the potential that there will be zero sample remaining after that amplification. However, if you're microconning to 35, unless there's some procedural issue that happens during that microcon process, there will always be volume remaining to amp a second time.
And when you submitted your requests via the I think you called it the Teams form, have I called that?
MS Teams.
For reworking at state and stage.
For reworking the sample and statement stage, would you in that form specify the volume to which you wanted the sample to be microconcentrated?
No. So my understanding is that form is that MS Teams form is used if I want to rework a sample that already has a final result reported. So I've been told by Justin that DNA insufficient for further processing and no DNA detected are result lines that are considered interim. So I don't need to request permission from the managing scientist to rework those samples at statement stage.
Those are the first questions. Thank you.
Ms. Rees.
Thank you. Ms. Quatermain, you've been asked some questions about wording and statements. I'll just take you to document WIT.0012.0027.
Oh, Ms. Rees, I'm sorry. I've got a question to ask, and I should ask it before you begin, I think.
Certainly.
Yes. Ms. Quatermain, yesterday you... excuse me a moment.
Commissioner, I might just read the final digits of that number. So that
sorry, I stopped you on the last digit. Go ahead.
It's 0027.0001R. Thank you. Sorry, Commissioner.
Yesterday, Mr. Hickey asked you whether you had put to you, rather, that you had never been reprimanded for making a suggestion or asking a question, and you responded that you've never been reprimanded, but you bring things up and things can take a bit longer, or words to that effect. And you said that your belief that you referred to in paragraph 17 of your second statement, that if you challenge or ask a question made by management, you put a target on your back, that belief or perception was based upon perceptions of various events over time. You remember saying that? Can you help me with what various events there were that led you to that perception? Or any of them?
So if I give you an example, perhaps I've, since 2015, I think, applied for some flexible work arrangements. And most recently when I applied for one, I went through all the right channels and the executive director signed it off, no questions asked, approved, and returned it to me in a timely manner. Previously, I've had the complete opposite of that, that I've waited up to 60 days when our HR manuals say that a response should be delivered within 21 days. I've waited up to 60 days to hear anything. I've had to chase it up multiple times. When I've received it back, it's been partially approved, partially refused, with lots of different reasonings and things in there, and then I've had to renegotiate. And I feel like sometimes things seem to be made difficult for me because I have questioned things over time, not necessarily had bad responses. Like with Kathy's emails, they're always very polite and very matter of fact, and it's more the fact that I've questioned the managing scientist. I get the feeling that she potentially doesn't like that, and this is just my feeling and my perception of that. And then I feel that's somewhat in a way with my flexible work arrangement, kind of a punishment for me questioning authority. And that's just a feeling that I've had over the years.
And in relation to the delayed response to your request for a change in working hours, who had to authorise that on that occasion?
So I submit my, I discuss my application with my line manager. I then submit it to, I've been sending it to my line manager, Justin, Kathy, and the executive director, because all of those people need to lay eyes on that document at some point. It's my understanding that the executive director is the person who signs my final documentation with the authority, or approves, rejects, refusal, whatever, but that is done as a result of consultation with forensic DNA management around departmental requirements and what, whether this arrangement will fit well with what the department requires of me as an employee. So when I previously have spoken, I've applied for a flexible work arrangement and spoken to John Doherty about it, he has said to me that he would recommend I'd be very explicit in what I'm asking for in my request, because he had seen other requests get knocked back effectively because, or portions of them refused because the applicant wasn't explicit in what their request was. So that's just been a big thing for me, and it's ongoing because every 6 months I've had to, since 2015, I've had to reapply for a new flexible work arrangement, and it's just an ongoing thing that continues to happen.
What, for new arrangements or to renew the old arrangements?
At the start it was because I wasn't allowed to start work before 7 o'clock, I was willing to come back from, I had a period of leave and I wanted to come back full time. But I had to drop my children at school every second week, every day. So in order for me to be able to come back full time, I would need to start work at 6:15 in order to be able to finish in time to pick them up. And there was a time there that I was refused to do that. So for that 12-month period, I effectively lost 5 hours of pay and 5 hours of work per fortnight because I wasn't allowed to start work prior to 7 a.m.
How did you lose the pay?
by not being able to work the hours.
Oh, I see. So you had to quit early to pick up your children. So you would dock that pay.
So effectively, even though I was willing to work a 38-hour work week, I was only working a 32-point-something-hour work week because of the department's inability, reporting team's inability to start prior to 7 a.m.
So rather than let you start at 6, you were compelled to choose to cut your work hours and do less work?
Yes.
And whose decision was that?
I can't remember the executive director at the time.
Well, that's the ultimate. I take it Mr. Howes was then in the position above you. Oh, Ms. Ricker, of course, Mr. Howes, Ms. Allen, and then the executive director of the day who has the final official obligation to decide one way or the other. Yes. All right, thanks. And you said more recently you got a quick response from the executive director. How recently was that?
I think it was in May. In May, I applied for a flexible work arrangement, which is still working full-time hours, just a portion of my time from home. And I sent that through the proper channels, and Lara Keller approved that in its entirety and actually approved it for 12 months, which is the first time I've had a flexible work arrangement approved for 12 months rather than 6.
Thanks. Anything arising out of that, Mr. Hickey?
No, thank you, Commissioner.
Anyone else?
No.
Ms. Rees?
Thank you, Commissioner. Ms. Quartermaine, as a professional woman, why is it important to you to have flexible work arrangements?
It's important for me because I want to maintain my career. I want to maintain, I want to be current in my job and be present. I want my children to see that I go to work and I do a good job and I love what I do and I talk to them about that. I want to be able to balance being at home and seeing them while they're little with being able to come to work and enjoy my job and spend time with my work colleagues and do the tasks that are important at work. But I want that balance is important. To be able to spend time with my family while they're still in primary school, it's such a short period of time that lasts, that when they start high school, that time has passed. So I'm trying to maximise the time I get to spend with my family while they're young, but also be able to work full-time as a forensic scientist because that's what I want to do.
Do you feel supported in that in your workplace?
More so recently, since Lara Keller has been the acting executive director. And I've always had the support of Kylie Ricker, and most recently, now that I'm in Sharon's team, I've got Sharon's support as well with those flexible work arrangements.
Was May the first time you spoke to Lara Keller about flexible work arrangements?
No, I've spoken to Lara prior to that about flexible work arrangements and the concerns and issues that I've had in the past. May was the first time that I'd submitted a flexible work arrangement to her and had it approved for 12 months.
Had you previously submitted applications via other channels, which ultimately led to her?
There was one previous flexible work arrangement, which must have been in the November of the year before when Lara had not been there long, that I submitted to her. The previous executive director's recommendation, I submitted my application to my line manager, Justin, Kathy, and the executive director because all of those people needed to be involved in that process. So that was the November prior.
And what if anything, was Kathy's response to that application?
As far as I could tell, Kathy didn't have anything to do with it. Kathy's signature is never on any of my flexible work arrangements. It's always the executive director who signs them off.
Did you at any stage take concerns about your interactions with Kathy about flexibility to Lara Keller?
Yes.
And what was that?
I discussed a few issues with Lara around flexible work arrangements and the fact that there are quite a few of us in reporting that have them, and it's quite stressful to have to go through this process every 6 months having to justify again why we consider them to be necessary and having to submit them and then wait for a response, not knowing what that response will be. And Lara's opinion on that to me was, I believe that management should support their staff. They should trust their staff. They should go out of their way to do whatever they can to meet the needs of the business and meet the needs of the employee.
So just on that point of meeting the needs of the business, if, for example, you are giving evidence in court one day, who do you actually liaise with about giving evidence in court? Who is your direct contact?
You mean outside the lab?
Yes, sorry.
Oh, outside the lab?
Yes.
I liaise, well, we have a liaison unit on campus, so they're not part of forensic DNA analysis, but my communication is with them. So anyone, like our statements that we issue have a phone number at the bottom, and that phone number takes anyone who has any inquiries about witnesses or court or anything to that liaison unit, and then they liaise with us around court requirements.
So those communications don't come via Kylie Rieker, for example, or anyone in that chain of management upwards?
Not usually, no. Only if, say, for example, I'm on leave and the day I come back from leave I'm required for court, then Kylie might have to step in and do something about that, or Sharon might have to step in and do something about that.
If Mr. Operator, if you could show that email, I read the reference in full report. Yes, it's on the screen. Thank you. Quartermain, this email is from Justin Howes. You're included in the address list, and it's from August of 2016. He talks about a few instances which have been brought to his attention where the collective agreement on statement wording hasn't been used. And it's not about the DIFP process, obviously. It's long before that. It's about the wording for STARMIC statements.
Yes.
I want to talk about the fact that there were many reasons for a standardised approach, and apart from the important point for standardisation, it was to help any scientist to pick up any statement at any time and be comfortable with the wording, and to help reviewers efficiently perform their task with minimal disagreement. You understood from that, didn't you, that there was a requirement that there should be a standard use of language across statements provided to court? And what freedom did you feel you had to derivate or deviate from that standard wording in your statements?
Limited, if any. The majority of the reporting team, there might be very minor wording differences between us, and very minor, as in sometimes people use thus and I don't use thus. But other than that, we all stick to the same wording.
You raised your concerns about...
Are you going to tender that email?
I'm sorry?
Are you going to tender that email?
I think it may already be tendered during Ms. Rieker's evidence.
Oh, is it all right? Thanks. No, don't worry. It's all right.
But, I do have the reference, though, which may be useful.
Yes.
The transcript is being looked at in the future. It is... I'll just get the exhibit number to Kylie Rieker's statement. I'm sorry, I don't have a note.
One of your helpers can do that while you carry
Thank
on.
Thank you. I'll put it on the record at the conclusion of my re-examination. You were asked your concerns about the DIFP process, or that you had raised. You gave evidence that you raised your concerns about the DIFP process over a number of years, and you were questioned yesterday about some emails which you had sent. The first of those was in 2019, and then you had also written in 2020 and 2021. Mr. Operator, if you could put up FSS.0001.0051.5008.
Quatermain, you were shown this document by Mr. Hunter yesterday. It's just being redacted for contact details now. The email was sent by you to Kylie, but copied to Justin Howes, Alison Lloyd, and Sharon Johnston.
Yes.
And you can see, can't you, that while you didn't send it to Ms. Brizzotto, that Mr. Howes appears to have sent it to her?
Yes.
The day after you sent it, so the 8th of March 2019.
Yes.
It was suggested to you in cross-examination that you could have taken your concerns about the DFP process to the quality manager, the quality senior scientist, and to the managing scientist. Do you recall that line of questioning? If I can take you to your understanding of the organisational structure, Ms. Brizzotto is the team leader of the evidence recovery and quality teams.
Correct.
She's essentially Mr. Howes' equivalent, but he oversees the analytical and the reporting teams.
He oversees the reporting and intelligence teams.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll just refresh my memory. Apologise. I see. So analytical is actually under Ms. Brizzotto as well. My mistake. So when Mr. Howes was written to in 2019, when you copied him into that, he was your team leader and he was relevantly the team leader of analytical.
Reporting?
I'm sorry, reporting.
Yes.
And he sent it on to the team leader of evidence recovery, analytical and quality.
Yes.
The quality manager, who does she report to?
I think she reports to Kathy.
I'll just take you
The quality manager reports to Paula.
All right. And is there also a quality senior scientist?
Sorry, the quality senior scientist reports to Paula. Sorry, okay. I'm getting my terminology confused.
So the quality senior scientist is
Kirsten Scott.
And she reports to Paula.
Reports to Paula, yes.
And then Helen Gregg is the quality manager.
Yes, sorry, Helen Gregg, yes. Right. And I don't know who Helen Gregg reports to.
And she's not within the lab itself. She sits outside of the lab.
In her normal role, she does, yes.
All right. And it was suggested to you that you could have taken your concerns in relation to the DFP process to any one of those people. Can you tell the commissioner why, when you'd raised it, 2019, 2020 and 2021, why you didn't take it further than that?
Well, when I raise these issues, we're divided into teams so that our area of expertise is within this particular field. And so my line manager and Justin are the people who, in my opinion, would understand why this is a concern to me. I don't know with respect to, for example, Paula's role or Kathy's role, if they still write statements or review them or do any case management. I don't know if they do or not, but I know that my team leader and my line manager both do. So those people are the ones, in my opinion, would understand my concerns. And that was why I had brought it to Justin's attention a couple of times. And also I know that Justin is the person, as well as Kathy, that has the contact with police. So within reporting, we don't really contact police, like I said yesterday, for any particular reason. And these types of concerns are things that I believed if I brought to the attention of Justin that he would then be able to take up with whoever he saw fit to take that up with as a concern.
And, in fact, in 2021... in your email, you were taken to it yesterday, you proposed to him a piece of work that could be done with these samples to see essentially whether they should stop being processed in that or stop being triaged out like they were being.
Yes.
And it was suggested to you in cross-examination that you could have, for example, raised an OQI in relation to this issue. What would the procedure be?
for an OQI and when, who would have to approve it in order for it to go ahead?
I would have had to have raised it to Justin and Kathy, but probably also would have had, I've only ever raised one or two OQIs in my time there, so I'm not, I can't remember the process exactly, but I would have had to have raised it with Justin and Kathy and potentially added my line manager in so that it was visible to her as well to see what my concerns were.
And why didn't you do that?
Well, firstly, an OQI isn't really like an email that you can back and forth about something and have a trail of information to go back to. It's not as instant as what an email response can be. And also when you raise things within an OQI, nothing needs to change. It just needs to be acknowledged that that has been raised, which to me is effectively just as well put in an email. So I've just stuck with emailing for visibility to all the people that need to see it, and then any responses I get I can forward on to my team if I think it's relevant to them. So I'm just, I guess, more comfortable with liaising with people in that way.
You were also asked why you didn't put a comment on the SOP. Do you want to explain why you didn't do that?
Well, a comment against a SOP effectively doesn't have to be incorporated into a SOP, and it doesn't have to be dealt with quickly either. Sometimes SOPs are only reviewed every year or so, and so you can record a comment against a SOP and it can sit in the comments section of the SOP until it's up for review again, which might be, you know, 10 months' time. So in order to get something brought to the attention of the people that are relevant in a timely manner, again, that's why I like to do write emails to people and then get responses so I can refer back to those if I need to.
You, in your 2019 email, and I apologise, Mr. Operator, if we could just go back to it. It's the FSS 0001. Yes, thank you. Further down the page, I think it's on the next page, in fact. Just at the top there, we sign our statements in good faith and they state that we could be liable for prosecution if we're stating anything that we know is false. You go on to say, saying DNA insufficient for further processing when a quant value is near that figure, I believe, based on my recent experiences, is false. So you raised that concern in 2019 and then again over these 3 years. The last occasion of which was 2021. The response that you received, why didn't you then escalate it further?
Well, this year I did actually bring it to the attention of our executive director. I discussed it with her. I gave her an example of a specific case that I'd worked on where I'd gotten some good usable DNA profiles from DNA insufficient samples. And I told her that I had taken it upon myself to rework these samples at statement stage when I realised they were currently being called DNA insufficient, because I wasn't comfortable reporting that in my statement when I knew that I'd submitted some samples and had gotten great DNA profiles for them, samples that had fallen within that quant range.
So you spoke to Justin and you spoke to Lara. Can you explain to the Commissioner why you didn't speak to Kathy Allen about it?
I don't really feel comfortable approaching Kathy. And the times when I have had conversations with her, and I can think of a specific example, it wasn't an easy conversation, nor was it pleasant. Lara comes across as a very approachable person, very willing to discuss any issues, to the point where she'll put her mobile phone number on emails and say, please call me if you have any concerns about anything. I've always felt comfortable raising things to Justin for the same reason. He's just an approachable person and I've always been happy to deal with him. It's just unfortunate that he didn't take my suggestion in this instance to be able to do some further work on those samples.
You asked some questions about this comparison between this email or the types of messages you were sending to Mr. Howes about DFP. I won't paraphrase it. I'll take you to some questioning by Mr. Hickey yesterday, which is at page 963 of the transcript, at line 37. We're being asked about paragraph 59 of your statement, where you said, when talking about that case, so the rape case, the five samples, which ultimately produced two usable profiles, you said the classification of such a sample, so referring to where sperm had been present and there were DFP results, the classification of such a sample as DNA insufficient for further processing is, in my view, unacceptable from a scientific perspective. Remember that part of your statement. You were then asked what you communicated to Mr. Howes, or it was suggested to you that what you communicated to Mr. Howes in 2019 was not communicated in a binary way so that he could understand you regarded it as entirely unacceptable scientifically, was it? Do you recall being asked that question?
Yes.
When you wrote to Kylie Rieker and forwarded or copied it to Mr. Howes, when you said, saying DNA insufficient for further processing, when a quant value is near that figure, I believe, based on my recent experiences, is false, what did you mean to convey about whether that was acceptable scientifically?
That it wasn't acceptable.
Was what you were saying then any different to what you said in paragraph 59 of your statement?
Ray, can I just...
Yes, so of course.
Which paragraph?
59, Commissioner.
So I'm effectively saying the same thing, just using different words.
A really quick question about calling in sick. You'll be glad to know I too only have a few questions left for you. You spoke yesterday in your evidence about the fact that you needed to call in and that if you didn't, this was under cross-examination, that you would receive emails reminding you or telling you, notifying you that you hadn't done the right thing. Was there anything else that's done as a result of people failing to call in at the right time?
I'm not certain of this, but I think there's a register kept of such instances.
Do you know what that register is called?
I think I've heard the phrase non-conformance, something like that, non-conformance register. Again, I'm not certain and I don't have any details on that. That's just through overhearing discussions over time.
All right. Just some final questions then, Ms. Quatermain. You were asked some questions yesterday about your practical knowledge of microconning, that is your actual, whether you've actually done it, whether you've carried it out. Have you ever carried out any of the tasks in evidence recovery?
Yes.
That's when you first started at FSS. Do you now carry out those tasks on
No.
a regular basis? Do you perform quantitation?
No.
Do you perform amplification?
No.
Who does those tasks?
The analytical team.
And the evidence recovery team?
And the evidence recovery team.
The evidence recovery
Yes.
tasks. Do reporters, as part of their job, do any of those processing jobs?
No.
Is it the case that some of you have done those tasks previously, but you've moved into the reporting roles?
Yes.
And do you need to carry out Microcon to know its significance in the processing of DNA samples?
No.
Just a final question then. You were asked about your evidence that you feel that if you challenge or ask a question about a decision made by management, you have a target on your back. You were then asked why you've never told Justin or Kathy that you felt this way. Can you tell the commissioner why you've never told Justin or Kathy that you feel that way about your workplace?
I think I would come across crazy if I was to approach someone and say, you make me feel like I've got a target on my back. I'll discuss that with people who I'm comfortable with people who I trust, because that's a personal feeling and it's not something that I'm going to discuss with people that I don't have that type of relationship with. So I wouldn't take it to Kathy or Justin and say those words because I don't feel comfortable having those types of discussions with them.
Final question now, I promise. I think I've said that three times. You've given evidence that you raised your DFP concerns with Justin and a number of other colleagues, also with Lara Keller. You've also given evidence that you raised it with Inspector David Neville. Why did you feel you needed to raise it with David Neville?
It is my understanding that the contact point that Inspector Neville has with DNA analysis is Kathy and Justin, and that those of us who are doing the groundwork of interpreting and reviewing DNA profiles don't really have any opportunity to or for any reason to just have general discussions in the way that potentially Justin and Kathy can have with the police. So this was important enough to me that I was speaking to one of his staff who asked if she could pass my number on to Inspector Neville, because she felt that he also has the best, we have similar interests with respect to, Inspector Neville and I both want the best DNA profile that can be obtained from a sample, and that the information that I'd provided to her would be potentially of interest to him.
I have now finished, Ms. Quatermain, but Commissioner, I understand that the email that I referenced earlier, which was the 2016 email from Justin Howes, which is wit.001.
Hang on, let me just get a number. Excuse me a moment. Yes. And what was the number?
wit.0012.0027.0001_R. That email has not yet been tendered. It should have been, I understand, in the evidence of Ms. Rica. I tender that email.
Is that the one on the screen now?
Yes. There is a redacted version which I've sent. I'm sorry.
That's not it, is it? No.
I think I read the wrong number into the record. I apologise.
But the one on the screen is the one, is it? I think.
Okay.
The one on the screen is the one that you want?
No, it's the wrong one. Sorry. That's a different document. So the number is wit0012.0027.0001_R.
Yes. That's the one you want tendered?
Yes.
Exhibit 64.
Thank you.
Commissioner, would it be convenient to break for morning tea?
Certainly.
I understand this hedge will open.
All right. We'll resume at 22:12.
Oh, I'm sorry. We'll take Ms. Keller after the adjournment.
Yes. 20 to 12.
All rise.